there we go. Well, thanks, everybody. My name's Sandy Beach. I'm still an alcoholic. And I've really had a good weekend. Met a lot of wonderful people. I can see AA in this area is really strong and God-centered, which is very heartwarming because we travel around. Clancy calls them pockets of enthusiasm. And then there's pockets of endurance. You don't want to live in a pocket of endurance. Sobriety is grim, but you can do it. I've been doing it for 25 years. And even if you don't want what I have, you can make it. And the locations will remain anonymous, so don't even ask me. The 10th step, continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it, is if you're new, this is one of the steps where when you read it, you can't figure out what's really involved. And so when you read the literature about it, you go, oh, I never would have, I picture, from now on, I just chug along. And if I make a mistake, then I acknowledge it and make amends. And that pretty well captures the whole thing. And that couldn't be further from the truth. There's so much more in this step than meets the eye. So I thought as a starting place, I would bring your attention to one sentence that's in the big book about four sentences after the step starts and see if this is what you thought of when you think of the 10th step. And the sentence is, we have entered the world of the spirit. I doubt if that was your first thought when you read, continue to take personal inventory. So the entire discussion of the 10th step has to take place in the world of the spirit. Otherwise, you miss the point of it. So when they say that 10, 11, and 12 are maintenance steps, they're talking about maintaining the transformation that took place as a result of the first 9 steps. So when it's, we have a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition, they're talking about a transformed spiritual condition which allows us to see the world of the spirit and to understand that there's a great difference between the operating rules of the material world and the operating principles of the spiritual world. And it's trying to get us to let go of all the guiding rules that we have inside of us that applied in the material world and completely trust the spiritual principles that operate in the spiritual world, which really consists of trusting ourselves less and God more. Trusting our old ideas less and trusting God more. So the language that is used in the spiritual world is different. And this language is read to you all the time. It's read to you all the time. This language is read as much as any language in AA, and we never see what it really says. So I'm going to read you language from the world of the spirit. And the main difference are the verbs. That's the main difference. And so, and this is the only reading I'm going to do. If I can see where I am. Don't get old. Okay, this is the type of things you hear in the world of the spirit. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Now, we're going to know it. It's just like you come into the world of the Spirit and we go, Mary, I'd like to introduce you to new happiness. How do you do? It just becomes part of you. It doesn't say you're going to achieve it. It doesn't say someone's going to show you how to get it. It just says you're going to know this new happiness. This is not a normal process. Do you see what I'm saying? It doesn't say you get a promotion and then you feel happy. We comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. Oh, so now suddenly we get introduced to peace. It doesn't say you achieve it. It just says you're suddenly going to know it. What a nice thing to happen. So in order to know it, you have to experience it, which means it just was given to you. You are at peace and you've never been at peace before. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. That's a verb that a magician uses. Oh, you got a problem with the self-pity? Watch this. Did you ever think that when you read these sentences, it will disappear? We will lose interest in selfish things. Oh boy, I'm bored being selfish. Man, it doesn't even interest me anymore. I mean, imagine this happening to you. I've been selfish all my life and I'm just kind of bored being selfish, so I'm just not attracted to it anymore. Are you getting the idea that this is not the type of solution that you would get on a psychiatrist's couch as you're working on these problems? I doubt if he would look at you and say, you're having a problem with self-pity? 3 visits, it'll disappear. 3 visits, self-pity is going to disappear. You can't even find it. The point is, in the world of the spirit, it doesn't exist. Self-seeking will slip away. Now it's not going to disappear. It's going to slip away. All this concern about yourself is going to slip away. It's like out the back, Jack. 50 ways to lose self-seeking. That's why I'm pointing out these verbs. And so next time this is read, you'll hear it. And you'll just go, yeah, that is an unusual choice of verbs to describe these things. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Used to be this way, now it's changed. Are you seeing the components of a spiritual awakening? It's being laid out for us right here. Your whole outlook will change. Chuck Chamberlain would say, new pair of glasses. It used to suck. Try these. Looks great. The new pair of glasses. Your whole outlook will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. I know I've been hanging around a long time bothering you about your fear of people. I'm busy, I'm gonna have to leave you. I know you've been worried about it. I've been here pressing you for 20 years about being afraid of financial security. I have to go work on this guy, so I'm gonna leave you now. They're gonna leave us. I mean, just this is why I'm pointing this out. And then, of course, we know this, we will intuitively know how to handle things that used to baffle us. So now we are speaking the language of the world of the spirit. We're going to intuitively exist. And there's a big difference. We're going to intuitively exist. When things come up, instead of trying to figure them out, instead of trying to worry about them, instead of trying to apply ourselves to it, we're going to let it go and wait until we're given intuitive guidance. That's the new operating rules in the world of the spirit, Or you can go back to the material world and live by those. And most of us, as we're getting started in this, we live in both places. And we spend the rest of our life, that's why those are the maintenance steps, they call it, moving more and more and more into the world of the spirit, where meditation, prayer, and all these things that'll be talked about by Bob would take place. You. And then comes the statement of the entry into the world of the spirit. We suddenly realize that God is doing all this. So at that moment in time, we personally have a sudden awareness of God. That it is the big deal. That's the moment when you just go, oh my God, this is God that's doing all this. It was as if you were contacted. And then we want to maintain that contact. We want to maintain our conscious contact. Where did the contact come from? Here. We suddenly were contacted and we realized there is a personal God in my life. It doesn't happen to your group, it happens to you. And then it says, are these extravagant promises? Well, if you look at these promises, they're beyond extravagant. I mean, this is the jackpot of human existence. And when it says, are these extravagant, we go, we think not. And we go, really? Why aren't they extravagant? Because God's doing it. This is a piece of cake for him. But for us to do it, it would be beyond extravagant. You're going to cause your fear of people and economic insecurity to disappear? I don't think so. So this is the language of the world of the spirit that we're entering. And then comes the guarantee. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And then the final, final magician's word. They will always, out of nothing, materialize if we work for them. So out of nothing, this happens. It just appears. You have financial security without any money appearing. There's no reason for you to be comfortable around people, and you are. So then you realize something profound has happened, which brings us to step 10. So you might say this brings us to the doorway of the world of the spirit. And then we come into the world of the spirit where it says, we have entered the world of the spirit. Then we're supposed to grow in understanding and effectiveness. It's not an overnight matter, continues for a lifetime. Then comes the instructions on how to operate in this new world. Continue to watch for fear and selfishness and anxiety and all these things. So we're going to watch, continue to watch. Uh-oh, it's coming up. What are the new rules? We ask God at once to remove it. Are there any questions? I've just covered the entire plan. We ask God at once to remove it. We ask God at once to remove it. And then we go, cool. And the next time it happens, we go, well, let me see what I'm going to do about this. Maybe I should call somebody. And we leave God out. Now we're back in the operating rules of the material world. We leave God out. So it's going to take a long time to just constantly operate with God. Well, God, I'm starting to feel this. Well, God, I'd like some courage to go in and say, well, God, and we have a relationship like Jimmy Stewart had when he played Harvey the rabbit. Well, Harvey, we're in the office. He has this thing, and he's talking with him all the time. He's never alone. Everybody thinks he's crazy, and everybody's going to think you're crazy. What are you doing? Oh, I'm just talking to my higher power here. Don't worry. We're just, I'm doing fine. Don't worry about us. I'm sitting here. No, I don't mind waiting here. The two of us will just be talking, and you're all alone in the waiting room, and you're saying, well, and then when you come for an appointment or go to go make amends, tell Mr. Brown, we're here to see him, and when you go in to see him, you know, it's you and God are there to do something, ask for a, see if they want to buy your product or whatever it is. Yeah, God and I just are dropping in, see if you're interested in this. And so it's a different person who is functioning in this. We ask God at once to remove them. Then, since we're new at spirituality, even as Bill writes, people of high spiritual development always insist on checking with others the guidance they feel they got from God. So we, as it says here, we discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anybody. And so what we're doing is, as we get intuitive ideas along the way, we run them by spiritual advisors because our ego sees the new deal. It sees us getting advice from God that we're over there not listening to our self-centered fears. We're suddenly getting a guidance from somewhere else. So the ego now goes, well, I better get over there and play that game. And so it disguises itself and it says, Mary, this is God. I think you should leave your husband and take that rich guy and go down to Puerto Rico. And trust me, you'll be happy. It's the most, really, really, really. So we call our sponsor. He says, I don't think that was God. Well, it sounded just like him. He was. So we run it by somebody else. So then we go back, and the whole step ends with more language from the world of the spirit. It's just this whole ending. We've ceased fighting anyone or anything. How do you like that? That's what you do when you move in here. You can have no more fighting. Whatever happens, it's okay with me. I'm not going to fight anyone or anything. Then here's, again, picture a psychiatrist telling you this. 5 visits and sanity will return. You see what I mean? But we read these things and we don't give them the proper respect they deserve. Sanity will have returned? When did that happen? I was just finished amends. Yep, sanity will have returned. So, and then if we're tempted by alcohol, we're going to recoil as if we stuck our hand in a hot flame. We're going to have that reaction. I'm going to think about drinking, and I'm immediately going to go, no. Isn't that nice? I don't have to practice it. I see a cold beer, and I go, wow, that would be no. So what a defense. Isn't that wonderful? That's what we're talking about. We will react sanely and normally. We'll find this has happened, and again, another magic word, it's happened automatically. What the hell is that? It's happened automatically? You automatically are protected from alcohol? You automatically react sanely and normally? Are you serious? Do you see the language in here? It is so wonderful. We will see our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us without any thought or action on our part. Okay, here's your new attitude. And then when you have that attitude, which is the way you see things, it's just wonderful to operate with all this stuff going on in your life. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. Or we're not avoiding it. We're in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We didn't even swear off. Instead, the problem's been removed. It doesn't exist for us. That's not a bad thing. You know that terrible problem you're worried about? Well, we're going to cause it to not exist anymore. It won't ever come knocking on your door telling you to worry about it. It just is gone. It disappeared. We're neither cocky nor afraid. That's our experience as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And then it goes on to say that we have a daily reprieve contingent on staying in the world of the spirit and trusting the ground rules over here instead of going back to the familiar area where the proper course of action is extreme worry. That's our normal thing. Oh my God, I'm gonna go home and worry about this till six. And six, then I gotta go out and I gotta do other things. And then very quickly in the 12 and 12 has that, just the whole plan. In other words, the name of the game in the spiritual world, the winner here, you win if you're the least disturbed at the end of the day. We just commence it. Let me see. Well, you're obviously not undisturbed, so you're a loser. And then we just go around. And so it's not who makes the most money. It's not who makes the most sales. It's not the one who gets the new car. It's the one who stayed undisturbed all day. That's the new ground rules. And so if you want, you know, you say, well, geez, I'm going to start playing that game. How do you stay undisturbed? And then it gives us the spiritual axiom. Anytime you're disturbed, don't look out there. There's something wrong with you. Well, what about the... No. There's something. Well, what's wrong with me? You're disturbed. Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess I have to admit that. Yes, I am. Okay, so you do not, you're not allowed to move forward. We really ought to have a machine on us. That we're going through our day. As soon as we get disturbed, it goes, you can't go in. Do not go into that meeting yet. You have to get undisturbed before you go in there. I have to get undisturbed before I go in there? Oh my God, I've never gotten undisturbed that quick. Oh yeah, it's real easy. First of all, you have self-restraint so you don't do anything while you're disturbed. Otherwise, you have to make 12 amends. Self-restraint. You get up in the morning, you pray for 10-second cushion between you and all the events that happen. Second, an honest analysis of what's wrong, which means you run it by your sponsor. Well, I just came into work today. The lady came over. She told me this. And said, well, what did she say? She said, the memo that I wrote was terrible. Read the memo to me. It is terrible. Go over there and apologize. Tell her you'll make a better memo. I don't want to make an amendment. You go over there. So you go over there and then you go, okay, now I'm there. You put it to rest. And we're undisturbed. But then it may be that the memo's wonderful. And you go, well, your memo's wonderful. That was outrageous that she yelled at you in front of all those people. She's completely in the wrong. Forgive her. Why should I forgive her? Because you won't win the game. You'll stay undisturbed if you don't forgive her. Remember, the rules over here are staying undisturbed. And you keep doing it, and you suddenly realize, wow, this really is how you win. This really is how you win. You just pray to not get disturbed, but if you do, you implement plan secret A, four steps, and you go back to undisturbed. So I would say that's the essence of the 10th step. So then I want to tell you, does it apply in all situations? So let's look at one. Last March, my youngest daughter was murdered in the front yard of her home in Connecticut as she came home from taking her daughter to school. A month later, the woman I just, was the best woman I've ever been with, decided to call it quits. And a year ago, this week, my oldest daughter died of alcoholism. And during that time, I had had surgeries, and the pain level was extreme. So here's a good test for the principles of the world of the spirit. That's why I'm bringing it up. And so I had seen 25 years ago a lady on television in Washington, D.C., who I never forgot. I'll never forget that woman. Her son had just been shot that morning by some other kid. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and the TV reporters found her, and they stuck the microphone in her face, and they said, how do you feel about that kid that killed your son this morning? And she just stood there with total dignity and said, I've already forgiven him. Now, I had been involved in spirituality for 20 years, maybe longer. I had no idea you could forgive that soon. I had told myself that there's a certain minimum period where you must stay angry and hate and all of that, because you just can't do it as it's happening. But it stayed in my mind forever, and what she showed me was the real power of forgiveness occurs when you do it as it's happening. As it's happening. Because then hatred and resentment and anger can't get in. They can never come in if you forgive as it's happening. And the Amish did that, and I saw that a couple years later, and they're all over consoling the family of the boy that did the murdering. So when you see these things, don't forget them. Tuck them away and realize that. So as my youngest daughter who found the body is calling me describing all this, I remembered these incidents, and before she hung up, I had forgiven whoever did it. And we still don't know, but it doesn't really matter to me because it's none of my business. And so because of that, I did not have to deal with resentment, anger, or hatred. I only had to deal with sorrow, which God will help you with. And in the second case, I had, this caused me to really do some deep inventorying. And I remembered something, and on the second death, this was the top priority. And I tell you this because it is so powerful. When you get shocking news, whatever it is, there's always a small period of time before you react to it. They may finish giving you the news and then you look for a place to go sit down. You haven't reacted yet. And then you sit down and then you allow it to come in, the full impact of what you just heard. Does everybody kind of know what I'm talking about? That there is that little period. You get the news, but you haven't reacted yet. Use that second, that little time right there, and go to God and just say, God, before I react to this, I want you to know this will never change how I feel about you. This will have no impact whatsoever on how I feel about you. You are number one. I will love you the same amount, no matter what this is. Then you go back and react to the situation, and guess who comes with you? And you allow it to come in, and you can feel that God is just right there, just going, here, let's take it in together. And again, it seems to eliminate the anger, resentment, and you're left with the sorrow. So, to me, that is staying in the moment. In other words, all of the power of what our principles are to be applied now. And if they aren't, then we have to deal with a week's worth of anger, resentment, hatred, whatever it is, and try to get rid of that later on. And it's really hard. That stuff can hang around for a long time. So I bring these up because there's a lot of teaching lessons in there, and they're very powerful, and maybe you won't forget it if someone in this room 2 years from now gets a phone call and says, are you sitting down? You can bring God in as soon as you can and bring forgiveness in before you react to anything. So anyway, that's it. I just wanted to share that, and I'm sorry I took so long, Bob. There you go. You're the man.
Well, Sandy, I really am offended that you turned Sandy's mic on and you leave my on. It happens to me everywhere I go. It just, and it's always my mic that's off.
I know. Why. I give him money.
When I was the last 2 years, I've been trying to go broke, and whatever I built up for a lifetime, I threw stupidity and dumb and old is a bad combination. And I've had major deals. And it had a very loud suck. It did not get my soul this time, but it got most of my attention, and it was a Velcro-like place for me every time I wasn't kind of intentionally grounded. I really felt sorry for myself, and I felt dumb. And Sandy was going through what he was going through, and it just irritated the crap out of me that I had this major problem going on, and it seemed so chicken shit. That is part of what we do for each other. There is always someone we know who lost a daughter, if we can look for it or if we can see it. I'm going to take 5 minutes and talk about something negative that relates to what Sandy said, and I don't know, I haven't talked about it at length, but I want to talk about it, and I don't even know if it's so, and I'd like your feedback afterwards. Please don't embarrass me in front of the group. Our book, Bill Got Sober in December of 34, Bob in June of 35. Our book was written in 39, April of 39, almost entirely authored by Bill. He clearly was the chief author and the channel through which I think the power of the universe and our higher power came through. Just extraordinary. Just absolutely extraordinary and beautiful. His use of language is something. The 30s were a period of extraordinary spiritual interest and extraordinary spiritual growth. We had the Oxford Group. We had Emmett Fox. We had Religious Science. We had the Unity Movement, Fillmore. We had Church of Religious Science with, Fillmore was Unity. And who was religious? Ernest Holmes was Religious Science. The Oxford Group. It was a particularly pregnant time in our society. It was a particularly painful time because it was the Great Depression. People had more time for each other. Bill Wilson went down on a business trip and stayed at Bob Smith's house for 4 months. I mean, could there have ever been a better time to incubate Alcoholics Anonymous? They had one car in the New York group for the first 2 years or something like that. I don't know the exact statistics, but there were many or most of them were unemployed. Bill Wilson changed residence like 50 times in the first 3 years of his sobriety. He was sleeping on people's couches and in people's bedrooms. Bill Wilson. I mean... don't we have it tough? I mean, it is just, he's living above the 34th Avenue clubhouse or whatever, 24th or whatever it was, when Dowling comes up. He's living above the damn clubhouse in a one-bedroom room with his wife. And we think of later when graciously walking around stepping stones and going through. I mean, most of us would have cashed this in. He worked with 75 people. One committed suicide in his house. No one got sober before he went to Akron. He called 10 people, not one. He calls Tunks. Tunks gives him names, and he goes through, and Cyberling was the last one on the list, if I have that fact correct. Don't know. But how many of us would sit at a phone and put 10 nickels in it? I mean, the grace and motivation that this man had. And I didn't intend to say any of that. What I intended to say was... So Sandy's talking about this stuff working. When I hear someone with his strength and vision talk about it's working, I get this noise in my head saying, well, okay, asshole, why is it not working for you? I have that voice in my head. I have it this morning. There's a couple of things that I would like to do within my life. You can't see it, but I'm overweight. it's a trick. It's kind of like you were talking about. And there's a couple others that are none of your damn business. And one of the We exist in the environment in which we exist. The environment in which we exist today, in 2011, is absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts. It is an almost entirely secular society. It has no interest in talking about God. That conversation does not exist widely. Okay? Where would you go to get support? In the 30s and 40s and 50s, you know, advertising was informational. Now, they have sciences. I mean, they just show you a pair of breasts and the product, and all the guys go buy it. They have music that they play in stores designed to affect your mood in such a way that you are more likely to buy this or buy that. There's a science of moving us. So between television, newspapers, and magazines giving you the implied message that there's something missing or inadequate about you unless you take these steps and get this product or look like this or have some cool that you now don't have, you're not okay. We are being inundated, bombarded with a subtle message is we're not okay. That was not around in the 30s. And it isn't, I mean, there's a science about this. This isn't like a communist plot. This is just, we have just refined it and refined it and refined it and refined it. And these companies, everybody who's trying to sell us things to get our attention, and one of the main components is to somehow give us the impression that unless we get this or move in this direction, we're inadequate and something's wrong. You're being inundated. We are being inundated with that message. We are almost the absence of God, the absence of religion, the absence of spirituality. It is not cool. Cool is stuff. Cool is the big house. Now, our country's like had a wake-up call, like an earthquake. I mean, the end of 08 was kind of a wake-up call for the country, kind of a time to, you know, go do an inventory. Now, we don't seem to be able to do it. Wish we had the program, but we don't, you know, we're having a little trouble. We're still fighting. But what I wanted us to notice, and I think it's like it's invisible because it's the air. We're in a different environment. The wind is blowing 30 miles an hour. You wonder why you're drifting? You wonder why you're having trouble? If you're not grounded, you're drifting. You're moving. The wind is blowing. And it's a different game when you're playing it in a 30-mile-an-hour wind. I happen to think that there was more sanity in the 30s than there is today. I think society supported, as it did, I think, in the 60s when we came in, society supported recovery. I think today society supports addiction. These video games, this gambling casinos, it's like waiting for a bus in a whorehouse. I mean, you are just almost bound to miss the bus. It just keeps... But it is. I mean, it isn't that we don't want to catch the bus. It's just we keep missing it. And so I think in some ways, both because of the fact that so many of us are so immature, much less mature, I think, than the people that were coming in the 30s and 40s. I think we come in earlier, we're sophisticated, but we're pathologically immature. I think we're more self-centered because of our society. I think psychology is the religion of today. When you get to step 10 in the book that Sandy did such a great job on, we have now dealt with our past four or something like that. It says in the 12 and 12. Well, how many people in the room feel like you've dealt with your past? Like it's over, like it's done. I mean, the problem I have, it's endless. It's never done. It visits me all the time. Well, he just said, you know, I mean, he indicated and indicates another time that, you know, your problem, you know, your make a list of your defects of character, they're about to be cast out. You know, I mean, we are, but not for us. We are so psychological that we keep regurgitating this stuff and going over it and over it and over it. We do not have, when we're talking about faith, it's interesting, but we're not sure it's real. Psychology is real. It's about us. It's about me. I can just
do that forever. I've got a special person that I go pay $150 to talk only about me. What are you laughing at? We're not talking about you. I mean, I don't find talking about you quite as enjoyable as talking about me. I shouldn't say this, but I think I'm fascinating. The ground of experience in which we stand is different than the ground of experience of 1935. It is more complex, it is less supportive, it is more subtle, and it is deadly. If there ever was a time where we needed, where you really have to make a choice, a conscious choice to be spiritually grounded, we only have two choices. So, you know, Chuck, it's only one problem, self-centeredness. There's only one solution, God-centeredness. You can live your life, you know, in a self-centered way and suffer the consequences, or live your life in a God-centered way and suffer the consequences. Those are the only two choices. I think this has been an extraordinary weekend. This has not been an average weekend. We do not run into a group of people who are quite, you can just kind of sense what you can speak into. There's pitching and catching. You can't, if there's no one to catch, most of the stuff you can't pitch. This is not an average group of people. You just, what we're doing together, not just alone, is pretty good stuff, okay? And we're trying to share our lives, not the rules, not the just the words. You know, we're trying to make them come alive and take a look and tell you how we operate on a day-to-day basis, much the same way you do. Now, you're talking to people who've been doing it for 40-some years. So we talk it better, and we probably, in some instances, live it better because we've been practitioners a pretty long time, but not all the time. I mean, we still have the same foibles, and Sandy does, the same foibles, the same personality. Issues that go. But I think it is important to know that it's a different time today. And it is destructive, and it is against what we want to accomplish, and it's invisible. It's invisible. So I think we're starting out, I don't want to be negative, with somewhat of a deficit, and we have to be more intentional, because if we're not intentional, it's like hitting a golf ball, a 200-yard golf ball with a 30-mile-an-hour side wind. It's just going to end up 50 yards to the left of where we aimed. And so therefore, you've got to compensate if you are going to take that shot on a windy, exposed course. The practice, when Bill talks about the practice of self-examination, prayer, and meditation being a powerful package for the, and I just love that Sandy talked about, you know, that now we have entered the spiritual life. It is true. We've completed the steps. We've had a spiritual awakening. We are not the same people. You know, we look, see, you know, Bill Wilson in the 12-step talks about, that the person has now been able to do, feel, and believe that which he had not before with unaided strength and resources alone. He has been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He has been set on a path that tells him where he's really going somewhere, that life is not a dead end, that not something to be endured or mastered. I mean, there are three or four different places where we really talk about the spiritual awakening. And I like what Jung, or what Silkworth is, talks about that transformation, that change. And almost always when they talk about that change, they talk about it being suddenly, at once. I mean, our book, this is, if you would read some of the other books from the 30s, you would find that the language and the words we're using are very similar. This is part of the not just genre, it's part of the consciousness that was living at that time. So self-examination, a man that I enjoy listening to is a man by the name of Anthony DeMello. He was an East Indian Jesuit priest, extraordinary guy. There's a set of tapes that exist, and they are also in a transcript in a book called Awareness. Those books saved my life the first time I went broke. I was in bad shape, under my desk, stuck on my thumb in the fetal position, 22 years sober, dying. Those tapes saved my life. I was getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, could not sleep, and I'd go down to the athletic club, plug those tapes in, sit in the whirlpool, and cry. And best I had at that moment, and that, you know, that wasn't every day, but it was fairly regular. It was a tough period of time. And he defined spirituality as awareness, as waking up, that we're living, that we're sleepwalking, living our lives. But I want to say definitely, it's fun talking about the ethereal, it's fun talking about things that are spiritual and lofty. Not only are they spiritual and lofty, they're real. This is not a theory. It is real. 95% of the people in the world believe in a power greater than themselves. Not all of them, most of them are not attached to a form of religion. But this is real. This is not just something we believe. And this is something out of our own experience. We are a group of people who have a better BS detector than any group of people on the face of the earth, because we all have been liars and alibiers and rationalizers, and we can smell it and see it and hear it a mile away. This is real. You get in a group, you talk about the 11th step or you talk about the 12th step, you go around a group with 22 people in the group and say, just take 1 minute and say, if you've had a spiritual awakening, and a little bit about it. Everybody talks about it. You may have one or two people who are full of crap, but you go around that room, it's real. It is not, and yet we don't pay attention to it on a daily basis. We don't read anything about it. It's the most important thing in our lives, and we don't attend to it. I mean, it's just nuts. We don't read anything about it, many of us, until we're old. And then we sit up in these damn stools and tell you what you should do before it's too late. And but I have, you know, but most of the guys doing what we're doing have been searchers for a long time. I've been a searcher all my life. The participation in the 11th step about prayer and meditation, there is nothing. Meditation is one of the most important practices that we could get ourselves to do. Most drunks don't like it and don't think they do it well and therefore don't do it. They get into doing it and they try it and they just say, I'm just too antsy. I mean, I'm ADD. You know, you get into it, my mind just goes nuts. I'll read. I'll do something. I got my meditation book. I got my book. Get a cup of coffee and I sit in a chair. And I think that's fine. But it's not seated meditation. And please don't get the impression that I'm telling you that seated meditation is right, and if you're doing anything else, it's wrong. I'm not. There's lots of things that, practices that I wish I did, and I don't do, okay? But I do seated meditation. That busyness that we experience when we sit down to meditate, I mean, most of the time, first of all, the ego says, you don't do this. Mary can do it. She's got a clear mind. No, Mary's got the same mind you have. There's nothing wrong with you. This is what's there all the time. You wonder why you're anxious. You wonder why you're upset. You wonder why you're tired. There's 60,000 thoughts a day going through your head. You can't stop it. You think you generate your thoughts? Stop them. You can't. You know why? You don't generate them. They're there all the time. They're just like clouds in the sky. The only thing you can do is detach from them. Sink down to the bottom of the river, grab the weeds, and let the boats go by. There is no stopping this. Now, when you start to develop that practice in meditation, like when you develop some peace in an AA meeting, you start to take it outside. You start to have thoughts that no longer engage you and own you. You start to have peace. You start to have some space. There is something very real and very practical and peaceful. We've had a couple of conversations with different people this weekend who are clearly not at peace. There is no peace. They're on it like white on rice, and it's killing them. This is one place where, and it's not easy, when you're down, when you're angry, when you're on it, when it's, you know, pasted on your eyeball, it's not easy. So you have to start, maybe you have to start out light. But it's a place to think about trying. It is the place that I started to get some distance from my thinking and have the sense that I am not my thinking. I am the person watching my thinking. I am the awareness in which it is happening. I am not my mind, thank God. Because when I stand and grounded in God, my mind is not there. You can't get rid of the mind, you can't get rid of the ego, but they become junior partners. You can thank them for sharing and have them not own the operation. You can and you will need those things. It's not like you don't need your intellect, but your intuition is a hell of a lot more powerful, and it contains your intellect. You not only get the, you know, the handheld computer, you get the mainframe thrown in. So it's real, and it's important. And it works. It works. Prayer. You know, I don't do a lot of formal prayer. This last couple of years, I've been down, and it's been difficult. I go to Mass twice a week at 7 o'clock. I go to 6:30 in the morning meetings. Why? I need something at the beginning of the day to remind me that money is not the most important thing, and losing what I did, even though there was stupidity, ill management, and bad decision involved, just what it is. Just what it is. Accept it. You know, I mean, you the only person suffering these days? Look around. Get your head out of your backside and look around. Do you think, I mean, this is life right now. Can you go back and undo it? No. Then live with it. Grow up. Move on. You tell the story, well, who cares? We all got our own story. I don't want to listen to yours anymore. It just isn't. I mean, it's true. I mean, they'll listen to it once or twice, but I mean, it isn't, you know, it isn't doing it. So, and when I have come to discover, interestingly enough, I tend to be negative with myself, is that I pray continuously. That the negative conversation, the internal dialogue, the committee, has been mostly replaced by a conversation with the God of my understanding. I'm going through the day having an internal conversation with the God of my understanding. I'm not very good at doing a formal inventory at night. And I don't do some of the formal praying that other people do and find to their great advantage. But I have an ongoing and continuous consciousness, awareness of the God of my understanding. And that brings me peace. I am not alone. I hate doing things alone. I have a tendency towards anxiety and a tendency towards fear, and my reaction to that is to not do it. But when I'm not alone, it doesn't matter what I think or what I'm afraid of as much. I'm doing it together. And I can make, if I have to make an amend, I can do it immediately. I just don't, I am not important in that space. And when you are less full of yourself, it's just more peaceful. You do not have to defend yourself. You do not have to compare yourself. You do not have to lift yourself up. You do not have to tear others down. You can just be where you are. You do not have to reach the conclusion and be outraged when something bad happens to you or your child. You're not exempt. I mean, are you a dodo? Do you think this does not happen in the world? Your sister dies? I mean, check it out in India someday. Well, they're not real people. I mean, they're on the newspaper. Bullshit. I mean, it's everywhere. There's no place. We're not exempt. But we have a place to go. We have a place to stand. It works. We have been forced into a program and a way of life that gives us this gift. I mean, we've been forced into it because we've been such big horses' asses. Because we almost killed ourselves and destroyed the life of five people around us. We've been forced into the only answer there is. So don't walk out of here thinking, I mean, if there's any message or communication I can give you, is God and spirituality is real. And this is not something I'm telling you to do because I think it's good for you. It's real. I do it. I've been doing it for a long time. It works. If you're looking for peace, it's there. And from my explanation, I'm a guy who has made and lost lots and lots and lots of money. And I wouldn't be married today, and in love with my wife today, I don't think, if I hadn't found the peace. I'm just too many moving parts, too high maintenance. This works, it is real, and it's been a privilege to share it with you this weekend. I didn't talk about anything that I really wanted to talk about.
We go for 15 more minutes?
You go, yep.
Son, hi. We're going to go another 10 minutes or so and then take a break. In both the big book and the 12 and 12, when it gets to step 11, it tells us a very important sentence. It says, this is an individual adventure. So it's not a we program anymore. You know what I mean? You're not in the group and we're all going to This you're the one. You're the one that's going to go on this adventure. And there's a very important verb that I really like. And it's in one of our steps. And when we read chapter 5, it's the last word. Anybody know what that is? Sought. God could and would if he were sought. You remember that when you read the three pertinent ideas? And then sought through prayer and meditation. So let me just take a second or a couple minutes here to think about that verb, okay? Seeking. And I have this little routine about my history of learning about seeking, because it's not a verb you use all the time. You know what I mean? You generally say, well, I was out in the backyard looking for my baseball. You don't go out, I'm going out and seek my baseball. So it seems to fit in a rather special category of looking. And so from my memory, the first time I heard this, the teacher said, we're going to play hide and seek. And I'm going, hide and seek. I knew what hide was, but seek, I don't know if I really knew what the word was. But then I found out that Johnny, we're going to shut our eyes, and Johnny's going to go hide somewhere, and then we're going to seek him, which means we got to find out where the hell he is, where he's hiding. And I said, this sounds exciting. I'm all ready to play. Do you remember that game? Yeah, yeah. So I looked around for Johnny, and for 2 minutes, I was really into the game. Well, maybe he's under here, maybe he's under there. About 3 minutes, I didn't give a shit where he was. Hey, Johnny, come on in. I'm through. I mean, how long do you think I'm going to look for you? I hardly know you. So I would say that was a very low level of seeking. But then came Easter, and my mother hid a basket of chocolate that, now you see, we're at another level of seeking, aren't we? Ah! I'm not giving up after 2 minutes looking for a basket of chocolates. You know, I'm going. It's 10 minutes, but I'm still, my interest is still piqued. Because of the prize I'm going to get. But after 10, I'm going, could you give us a hint? I remember are we cold or hot? Is it, am I in the right room? Could just, you know, you could see even chocolate, large amounts, was starting. And then finally she said, oh, okay, oh boy, and then I got it and all that. So, but that was better than hide and seek. But then, I guess I was about 16 or so, and our golden retriever ran away that we'd had for a long time. And the word was that he had run into the woods over there and didn't come back. So guess when I found out, when I got home from school, guess where I hung out? It was over by those woods, and calling his name, and then I'd go in, and then I'd, if I had the car, I'd drive around the other side and all of that. And the next day, guess where I am? And the next month, guess where I am? And the month after that, and the month after that. And you just knew this time you go over there, he's going to be there. And then I go off to school somewhere and I come back. Guess where I just have to drive by, just a little glance. And you all know this. You would keep it up for quite a long time. You might go back 20 years later and say, I know this is silly, but I'm just going to drive by. Okay. Do you think we can get our seeking of God up to that level? I think one of the things we have to understand is how much we miss God and don't understand that that's what we're feeling. We think it's something else. We think this is wrong and that's wrong. My career is wrong. My health isn't good, this and that. And that's why I feel so funny. The real cause of all the ill feeling is we miss God. And you know who told us that? Carl Jung, in his letter to Bill, when he said that he believes that alcoholics were born with an inordinate longing for God. Only it gets misdiagnosed. God, there's something missing. There's something wrong. There's something wrong inside of me. I got to fix this. I got to fix this longing. It must be I need a woman. It must be I need a job. I got to get, and we run and run and run. And look at everybody in this room tried every other thing there is, and it's still there. You want to look for the proof of the existence of God. Try to get rid of the longing for God. And you can't. And so it forces us to become seekers. Most people, it's never diagnosed correctly. They're over in some shrink, and he's not going to tell you your problem is you're too far away from God. And so we come in here, and they say, this is it. So you could be skeptical. You could say, well, that's just a theory. Well, what if that problem you've had all your life that alcohol would fix, what if you do these steps and it's fixed? Would you then agree that all your life, your real problem was you miss God? Even the best scientific thinker in the room has to go, okay, yeah, because you're in charge of announcing the results. You know what I mean? You could lie. You could have a spiritual awakening and your pride could say, I'm not telling anybody. This doesn't really work. I mean, we might go that far. But they'd see our composure and they'd know we were lying. So that's why I'm bringing up seeking, is that we got to pay attention to what our inner selves is wanting us to do. And it'll give us little hints. You may be driving by a bookstore and it says, why don't you stop in there and go over and pick up some author and take a look at him? Why don't you, hey, look at that lecture. Some swami from somewhere. And you're driving along and it says, why don't you sign up? And I'm not into that. Well, you just had a big signal from somewhere. You, not the person sitting next to you. They went by and said, I wouldn't go in there if they paid me $100. But you... maybe I ought to pay attention to those and start acting on them. This is your trip. It's your individual adventure. So I would like to get everybody and have a little name tag and it says seeker. You know what I mean? That's you. You are now a God-seeking missile. And you're just going to go and let that guide you, and I think you will be astounded with the results. So in other words, whatever your problems are, put them over to the side and just go seeking and watch what happens to them. That's enough.
Good.
All right.
A tag that's a seeker. I've got one that's a sucker. You think that seeker would be a better tag? I like that. I think that would be. I have two groups that I go to that relate to the 11th step. One is I go to a meditation meeting at 6:30 in the morning on Thursdays. We open the meeting with the preamble, and then we read the 11th step out of the book. We meditate for 10 minutes timed. We have a little one-page instruction about sitting with your spine straight and your feet flat on the floor and follow your breathing. Say, let go, let God. Very simple sort of thing. And then we break up into about 40 of us. We break up into four groups and discuss the 11th step. I've been part of a men's group for 25 years called Quest. Most of us are recovered alcoholics of pretty long standing. There are four or five members that are not. My spiritual advisor is kind of the spiritual father of the group. And the purpose of the group is to discuss our quest for God, what Sandy was talking about. There is no other subject. It is not an AA meeting. It is not a therapy meeting. We go, we meditate for 20 minutes, we eat a bowl of soup, and we spend an hour and 15 minutes talking about what we are doing in our lives to experience. And then we have swamis come in, we've had priests come in, we've had bishops come in, we do this twice a year, and we read four or five books a year and discuss them. Your job is to read chapter 3 and come next week and present chapter 3 to us. I think there is a subtle, there have been little, we say we don't have opinions on outside issues, baloney. I mean, there are subtly opinions on outside issues about medication, about treatment centers, about professionals in the field, and about, and there is in some instances, I would suspect not in this group, people who don't think you don't need to read anything outside. I mean, you don't know the big book well enough. The only thing you need to know is this. Now, I think in your early sobriety, there is absolutely no reason in your very early sobriety to get outside of the literature of the program. I think you can get confused and you can get lost. But afterwards, it has been my experience that every wonderful piece of literature I have read makes the big book more powerful, more familiar. I just keep saying, hey, that's in our book. I mean, it's just, and what you start to discover is the universality of spiritual principles. We don't own them. It is not just us. God didn't give truth to just a small group in the basement. I mean, but the special way he put it together is for us. So, okay, we're going to take a break. Yeah. How long? It is now 10:15. I have to leave here with Linda at 11:45, so I will not have a chance to say goodbye. If anybody wants to say goodbye, this break will probably be the opportunity to do that with me. And what time do we want to come back here? In 15 minutes? Would that be enough?
Okay.
How long do you need to set 12?
20 minutes?
No.
No. I mean, we'll do whatever we